You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
For too long, rental housing has existed as a lesser than choice to home ownership. Now, we can choose to rent because it enhances the life we want. Rise has a vision for rental housing that will shape our communities and create a meaningful connection between you and the place you call home. Rise is evolving rental housing, and it starts with you. How would you like to live? Visit homesnotforsale.com to have your say. Welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. I am thrilled to introduce Stephen here today. I've been a fan for a long time. I've been attending events he's been organizing. He's been a big cultural mover and shaker in the city of Vancouver, and I'm excited for what he has to share today about, I feel like he's moving and shaking some big things around the world. So a bit about Stephen. He is the guardian of Rise's unique culture and public identity. Stephen leads all creative output and ensures that Rise's strategic direction is clearly represented by its corporate brand and maintained throughout all areas of the company, from acquisitions through development, sales, construction, to customer care. Yes, you heard it. Stephen comes from the amazing world of building homes and houses. Passionate about the future of cities, especially Metro Vancouver, where he calls home, Stephen's unique career has spanned across markets, geographies, and disciplines. It has provided significant architecture, design, and communications expertise, and he focuses it on helping Rise produce more impactful and meaningful work. Prior to his role at Rise, Stephen was co-founder and creative director of strategic brand consultancy Cause and Effect. Through more than a decade of projects, initiatives, and events, Cause and Effect built a reputation for top-tier brand thinking, social and environmental consciousness, and a culturally focused mandate to create a better city. Stephen received a Bachelor's of Environmental Studies and a Master's of Architect from the University of Manitoba, shout out to the Prairies, and professional qualifications as an architect in the UK from South Bank University. From 2008 to 2015, Stephen hosted and led the production of Pecha Kucha, name and pronunciation to be argued later, which was a night in Vancouver, one of the most successful cultural events in the history of our city. I was an attendee to many of those nights and would often try to collect the poster because it was such a cool poster to collect back in the day when I was not yet married and had posters on my walls and was allowed to put up posters. So, Stephen, thank you for being here.
Wow. Thank you for having me. That was, I don't think I've ever heard anyone read my bio back to me like that. That was really nice.
Mm. It's always a joy to kind of hear it said. You know, it's like it's like hearing your obituary, right? You get to like hear it before you passed away. So just going to a quick back in time, Pecha Kucha, last time I saw you, you were on stage organizing these events. Tell me why. Why did you think as a, you know, cause and effect, you know, you would put these nights on? You know, it's a lot of work. You know, you went from different venue to different venue, you know, it was selling tickets, it was, you know, figuring out the alcohol licenses to all the things that go along with events. Why did you put all that work and effort in to what cause?
It's a good question. So, I mean, when it began, it was like a classic, it's kind of classic grassroots exercise where you begin something with without thinking too hard about what you're planning. So taking it back, so we began in 2008. Jane and I moved to Vancouver in 2003 and then kind of started our own thing in 2005. And so Pecha Kucha had been going kind of globally, sort of quietly for a couple of years there. And we were doing an exhibition in Vancouver, and part of the exhibition was looking to do a couple of sort of talks and events and so on. And so I reached out to the Pecha Kucha folks in Tokyo and sort of said, hey, you know, here we are in Vancouver. What are you guys planning? Maybe we could do this. And they actually said, you are one of seven groups from Vancouver who have applied to do Pecha Kucha, and you have to send us, and we had to send kind of all this information about who we were and what we kind of credentials and what our plans were. And they ended up sort of saying, okay, we've selected you guys to do this thing. So it was actually quite kind of official, and I kind of appreciated that. And then it began as a kind of, you know, one off and then a sort of two off thing where we sort of did a couple of nights and got a, you know, a reasonably good response. And people were like, oh, this is kind of fun. Okay, cool. And so then we were like, oh, shit, maybe we should do another one of those things. And so then we found a venue, which was this hilarious thing, which is called, for those Vancouverites out there, the Park Cinema, which is this mm-hmm. old movie theater on Cambie. And it had a licensed bar. And so you could, if you rented out the theater, you could, you know, take advantage of the licensed bar. So that was this kind of great thing about, you know, eating popcorn and drinking beer. And we were able to sell the beer at our own prices. I can't remember actually why that happened, but we sold cheap beer and
yeah, like three beers for $5.
Yeah.
And they were glass and they would roll down the theater all the time though. That was the thing between talks, you would hear this clink, 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 clink.
Yeah. So there was a real kind of, it was a really unique moment, I think, that when the event went to that theater, at that time in Vancouver, where there was a kind of, I would say a sort of self-discovery sort of trend going on, let's call it. Like, there weren't a ton of talk events like that. No. TED was still, in its infancy, if at all. And so that stuff had was sort of percolating, and we just happened to be the group that came along, I think, at the right time, and just sort of shone a light on all these kind of things that were happening. So then it just went nuts. Like it would sell out in minutes.
I remember they would go on sale. Yeah,
we sold that. We would sell 1,000 tickets in an hour, and so that was a weird little cultural phenomenon, and it had its. Had its time, and I mean, for us, that time was quite substantial. We did that through almost 40 different events and hundreds of speakers and thousands of guests and then it just kind of ran its course, you know. Yeah. For us, like we were, I think the thing about that event and I call it Pachakucha, but who knows, Pachakucha is great. The thing about it is it's so. It's sort of the ultimate in formula, right? Everybody gets 20 seconds per image and it, you know, goes along automatically. And so what's nice about it is that you can see a whole bunch of different people, but they all talk in kind of a similar type of format. But, you know, by the time we had done 40 of these things, you felt a bit like you were going through the motions. And I wanted to stop doing it before I felt like we were kind of doing that. And so, I said to Jane, you know, I think maybe we should think about not doing this anymore, or maybe we should get to 40. And she said, well, if you don't want to do it, let's just stop doing it, because we don't want to do it if we don't want to do it. And so then we stopped at like 37 or 38 or something. And so I couldn't bring myself to get all the way to 40 because it felt inauthentic or something. So anyway, so it was really quite an amazing time in our lives and established relationships that will go on forever here in Vancouver. And my Rolodex is ridiculous because of that, event. And I joke about the fact that I was a kind of C-list. I was C-list celebrity status in Vancouver for about 4 years. And now I'm just that old guy who lives in North Van.
Oh man. But the magic of it was, again, TED, you know, the Simon Sinek's TED video had just gone viral at the time. So people were aware of TED through that and other means, but it was like, it was, you know, TED was all about ideas and maybe you'd see 4 or 5 or sometimes 10 slides, where this, they were forced to do slides. They were forced to work in a system. And if they were a bad talk or they weren't good slides, you knew that it was going to end soon and it could go on to the next person. And you always went in at least 1 to 2 to 3. You sometimes all of them were incredible, but you always knew you were going to get something out of the evening.
Yeah, and we spent a fair amount of time curating people, but you know, we couldn't know everybody and predict everything, and we certainly weren't set up like a TED where we would ask people, you know, what are you going to speak about? Send me your images. How are you going to talk? All that kind of stuff. So we took a flyer on, you know, 90% of the people who were there. And, And I kind of liked that sort of, it was a bit of a risk for me as well. So we would sit in the audience and, you know, I would introduce the person, and then every single time I'd walk off the stage going, well, fuck, I hope this goes okay. And I had my shtick was sort of, like I sort of had a little bit of I don't want to say sort of critiquing humor, but I did.
No, you did. No, you were great. You were kind and respectful, but a little tongue in cheek. You'd have a little tongue in your cheek every once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. There were moments when people needed to get called out and I jumped on those and I think the audience kind of appreciated that. Yeah. And I did it in a way that I don't think I got a couple of emails that maybe said, hey, you were a little, but anyway, that was fine.
What was the talk? And I don't remember who the speaker was, but they spoke about independent restaurants in Vancouver. And every slide was a different restaurant in Vancouver. And their whole call was, eat at independent restaurants, don't eat at franchises or big brands, because we need to support the creativity in local restaurants. And I did that. I took the challenge. So for the good next year and even to this day, I choose that when I can.
That was, I'm pretty sure what you're talking about was Andrew Morrison.
Okay.
Andrew Morrison runs Scout Magazine in Vancouver, and it is the sort of probably the most knowledgeable food source in Vancouver. You know, it's interesting. Andrew and I have had an ongoing relationship since those days on all sorts of different things. And I'll tie this back into the work I do today because I've hired Andrew actually to act as a I would call him a kind of sorcerer, a sorcerer of cool for our rental projects, because what we realized with rental is that and this is where my founder and CEO of my company is. His voice is in my ear a little bit, where he's like, "Don't give away our secrets," and then I have to say, you know, ideas are the easy part, right? You got to execute on them, right? Yeah. So there's not a lot to. I can give away an idea; it doesn't mean anyone's going to do anything with it. But I think that, what we realized with our rental stuff is that the commercial components of communities have been a drastically undervalued source of culture and activity and connection to community and so on. And so we're approaching our retail areas of our projects with a much more sort of curatorial view, let's say. Incredible. And Andrew is helping us do that, because we've identified that if I can bring in, you know, if I have six different tenants, if all six of those tenants can be independent, unique, special people in Vancouver, then I can actually increase the value of the overall development, because rather than, you know, the chains coming in and providing me with security, I can actually get more security out of smaller, more independent groups. And so Andrew's like my secret agent on that. So we'll see.
That's incredible. And part of why I think I'm so excited about having you on the show was not just the history and my experience with the events that you produce, but the whole world of building developers. It's a lot of the work we do for my day job at Jelly, but I've never met a developer that has the philosophy that you have right now when it comes to rental properties. Typically in life, you know, I've been a renter and I've been an owner, and so I feel like you are doing something colossal, just from a shift perspective on actually bringing dignity to renters and saying that it's actually awesome to be a renter, and choosing to be a renter can be a choice, can be a lifestyle choice. Whereas I think for so long in TV shows and in movies and in even copy and marketing pieces, they've always said, well, if you have to rent, or they're marketing to owners and say, hey, you could buy this so that you could get some renters, right, and get some tenants. Whereas I feel like you are actually putting renters who have chosen to live that lifestyle in a really respected position.
Yeah, that's a big topic. So I'll give you a little bit of background on why where it came from my perspective. So I first of all I started life as an architect. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of where my career began. And then I left architecture to start this, at the time, this kind of, it was a design agency that my wife and I were starting, Jane and I were starting, and the design agency sort of morphed into a brand firm. Mm. But really our core knowledge and expertise and passion was around sort of city building stuff, right? So we were in cultural stuff, we were in transportation, we were in sustainability, we were in development. So a lot of our work sort of scaled in and out of those sort of topic areas. And so we did not get on with the development industry very well at all, to be totally honest. We were asking more from them than they wanted to give, and we got really frustrated with the kind of conversations that we would have that would start off with, oh yeah, yeah, we want to do something totally different, so yeah, cool, we're going to be in it, and then partway in you're like, wait a minute, no you don't, you just want the same old crap, like, yeah. And so that got, and I was kind of I was a bit of a jerk at times, and so it just didn't go very well, yeah. And so we stopped working with developers almost altogether, except one, and that was Will Lin at Rise, where Will was actually almost one of our first clients back in 2005. He was Rise was his baby. It had been growing for maybe a decade, but kind of one project at a time. He had a very small team. He was starting to turn into a kind of proper company, and we came along and helped him do, you know, corporate brand work, project brand work, messaging. We even did some interior design work for him back in the early days. So we had this sort of longstanding relationship, and he was just different. He did not want the same thing that every other group wanted. And so we had a relationship that kind of was respectful and interesting and kind of inspiring. And so,
but he also had the fortitude to carry it out as well. He wouldn't just say it, but then he would put his money where his mouth was.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we asked him, like, early days, I remember saying, like, why do you get out of bed in the morning? And he was like, well, to make $1 billion or whatever, because I think he thought that was what developers should say. But I don't think he really meant that. And what we discovered was, yeah, that really he got out of bed in the morning to do interesting stuff. And if he wasn't doing interesting stuff, then he'd rather race cars or do what other. And so, you know, fast forward, 15 years since we first started working with Will, he came to us and said, you know, I think he had reached another phase in Rise where he was like, okay, enough's enough. Like, I need to up the meaning dial. Mm-hmm. And, can you give me a little bit of help on how I might do that? So we started to talk about growth planning, driving back into brand planning, thinking about, you know, what are we trying to do? Who's going to help us get there? Yada, yada, yada. So,
and it wasn't just, hey, help me figure out how to slap a B Corp logo on my stuff.
No, it wasn't. It was,
nothing, like, against B Corps. I mean, that gets cool to become a B Corp. It's just,
absolutely. If your B Corp membership is integral to your business and like properly integrated, then I'm all for it. You know, there's some out there who, you know, it's a badge and that's fine too. So we were looking for, you know, authentic growth and authentic evolution. And so he muttered something like, if I do another, you know, lame building, I'm going to kill myself. Like, it was kind of that sort of thing. And I think the thing that people don't realize, you know, is that development is really hard. It's really hard to do interesting things, yes, because every single thing is pushing you back towards doing something very, very, very boring.
Well, it's the rules. There's rules, there's codes, there's policies, and you guys seem to be kicking down every door, which is what a true creative and an artist is it's supposed to break the rules.
Right? I think, it's exhausting. You know, it's exhausting to be like, you know, I talk about that sort of pushing the rock uphill analogy all the time, because it is like that with us, is that you, you push that rock, and if you take your hands off that rock for 1 second, it rolls backwards, and you're having to start over again. So it takes a kind of united front to actually push the rock. And so I talked to Will about kind of different ideas around, you know, staffing ideas, team structure, different ways to approach development, all kinds of projects we're after, all these sorts of things. And one of the key parts of the process is I said, you know, I think you need what I'm going to call a chief creative officer. And that's not really something you find in development. You find that in product design groups. And I said, if you start to think of your developments more like products, then you're going to start at the user and kind of work your way backwards.
That's so cool.
And so we created this role that was sort of a bridge role between sort of sales and marketing and development, where development's kind of focused on approvals and keeping the consultant team moving and budgets and time and all that kind of stuff. And sales and marketing is really concerned with the end goal. So how do I get it in the hands of buyers? How do I get it in the hands of renters?
Yeah.
But we wanted somebody...
How many pre-registrations can we get by this date?
And that's a whole nother story. But anyway, so we wanted something that somebody who was kind of looking at the big picture, looking at it from the lens of the end user and using design as the decision making tool. So they went around town and they interviewed a bunch of people for this role, and the kind of people from marketing backgrounds or people from architecture backgrounds or whatever. And so the HR consultant called me up and said, "Hey, can we meet to talk about this role? I kind of want to get a sense of what you're thinking here." And so we had coffee, and I sort of said, you know, by the end of it, it was sort of like, what you should do is hire like a former architect who runs his own brand agency. And, you know, and it sort of, and so he went to Will and said, "You know what, you should just hire Steve." And so we were in this meeting, and Will jokes to me, "Oh, you know, he thinks I should just hire you." And I kind of went away and went back to Cause and Effect, and Jane and I said, "You know, I could do that role." And Jane was like, "Well, maybe you should do that role." And we had kind of reached a point with Cause and Effect where it was like my personal brand, right? Mm-hmm. Like I felt like, you know, so the idea that I would step away from that was this really weird thing to think about. But
it's your baby.
One of the big carrots that was out there was, you know, one of Will's agendas for Rise was to deliver housing for locals. Like, how do we make sure that we deliver housing that people who live in Vancouver want? And really for me, that was like, that's easy. Let's just do rental. Because as soon as you do rental, then you just know that that's who you're talking to. So it was a really simple. So at that point it was like, great, let's do rental. And then as soon as we made that decision, it was like the whole world just opened up, and it was like, oh, okay, now let's walk into this space, which is, oh, you know what? No one's ever done rental in all of these different ways, right? Rental traditionally was, you know, this kind of utilitarian offer that was, you know, lowest price point for the kind of lowest quality of, you know, what would you just be okay with? Yeah. Okay, good. We'll give you that, right? And really maintenance focused and not really concerned with kind of community building and lifestyle and just happiness and all these sorts of things that people think about when they think about kind of how they want to live. So we just sort of set that agenda in motion, and we were like, okay, let's do rental. Mm-hmm. And let's just do it better than it's ever been done before. And so that's been a long process for us. So, you know, that's the other thing about development is it's so friggin' slow, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is you have an idea and it takes you like 6 years to prove it out. It's interesting days. So we've got about 1,000 units now, underway, And we're doing some interesting things, different things with the brand. We're choosing to develop what I'm calling a rental platform, which means that basically all of our rental developments exist under the same brand. It'll be a sub brand from Rise that will launch. Actually, will launch probably in the next month or two.
Wow.
So it'll be a different name, and that name will represent a new kind of rental lifestyle, really. Yeah.
Would you like dignified rentals?
Yeah.
Right? Where your ads will actually show humans and people versus just kind of very stark and kind of bleak and transactional.
Well, and I mean, it how do I say this? It responds to the change that we're seeing where people are choosing to rent.
Yes.
Rather than
I know I have lots of friends and family.
Rather than having to rent. And so when you choose to rent, you right away have a higher demand on that product, right? I've chosen this situation. So therefore, you need to deliver something back to me that lives up to my choice. Yeah. And so that's the game. And
that's really cool.
And we're super excited about it. And I think you can be as exciting as you want in rental housing because nobody worries about having to sell their place. So we have this issue in the sort of condo world where, you know, it is a commoditized system, right?
Yes.
No matter who you're talking to, they are going to sell that product on at some point, and therefore they just can't help themselves but make a purchase decision that is clouded by their need to sell.
Yeah.
And so we've tried to do different types of design issues with our condo product, and people won't do it because it's not that they don't like it, it's that they're nervous that somebody else won't like it.
Yeah.
And so the city, municipal governments are nervous and won't let you do daring things.
Yeah.
Your partners, your investors and banks and partners won't let you do daring things. And then the buyers won't even let you do daring things. So, you know, as a developer who's trying to do something different, there's actually not a lot of help out there on the condo side. When you get to the rental side, then there's a whole bunch of freedom that comes because people aren't so demanding. And, you know, if I put a pink door on your condo, you're like, ah, geez, I don't know if I want a pink door on my condo. What if nobody wants to buy the pink door condo? But I put a pink door on your rental home, and you're like, oh, look at that, my rental's got a pink door. Remember when we lived in the rental with the pink door, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's a bit of a different mentality to the to the renter, and they might even take pride in the pink door.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of trying to tap into optimistic, fun, a little bit more freedom and, you know, resonate with the renter and say, look, you take pride in being a renter. We're right with you.
Yeah. It reminds me of the way you're talking around the President's Choice did a commercial a little while back. I think really addressing loneliness in apartment buildings. And it was about people coming home with their groceries, of course, President's Choice bags, and someone putting some chairs and, you know, a chair and a table out in the hallway. And then all these other people bringing tables and chairs out, and it became this big long table dinner where everyone brought their food, and how it just brought this community together.
Yeah. Yeah. And there is something to be said. Like, I do think that rental, like when you own something, you are very concerned about your kind of four walls, right? It's kind of your thing. When you rent, I believe those walls come down a little bit. And I think you are more open to this idea, almost like, well, none of us own this place, so let's all not own it together. like there's something kind of interesting about that. So I think that community could be easier to sort of encourage in the rental world.
And you know, ideally, that your neighbors are also in the same position, that you've all chosen this sort of lifestyle, you're all choosing to be there, and probably have similar, you know, kind of choices in other places too, maybe. I gotta ask, so there's marketers listening right now, and brand side and agency side, and they're thinking about what you're saying. So the question is, you've now gone to a brand, and you've gone brand side from agency, and they're giving you freedom, they're letting you do some amazing things. Why is it? How did you find that world? So I'm thinking of the person who's been in your shoes, where they're banging their head against the wall. They're getting the same, doing the same cookie cutter ads all the time. They're doing the same old stuff all the time. You know, you made a big leap. You chose to make that leap. What's your advice for others to find that place where you feel like you're in a place where you can be yourself and you can actually do awesome things?
I don't know. I mean, if you listen to me complain on a daily basis about all the things I can't do, I don't.
But do you think you have the freedom you have today? Is it because of the owner of Rise is choosing to be courageous and choosing
absolutely. I've been given a role that is pretty unique. The majority of real estate development folks are in finance and management.
Yes.
Like that's the core of development, right? Because it's about managing risk, and you manage that risk through time management, through financial management. And so the creative guy is a bit of an outlier. And normally that role is given to consultants. So you normally have a core of managers and finance folks who hire out creativity, and the problem with that is that you're then at the skill of your consultant. So if your consultant delivers, great. If your consultant doesn't deliver, you know, there's not much you can do about it. And so I feel like now that we're internal, we have this kind of culture. At Rise of actually valuing, you know, creativity and valuing trying to push outside the status quo. It's definitely easier to do bold things. Let me tell you, it's still not a walk in the park.
Yeah. It's still work. Still work every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like for me, I think a big thing that like, how would I say this? So I'll use the expression amplify your actions. So I think that's a big piece of advice I'd give marketers is stop worrying so much about telling people how great you are. Mm-hmm. And focus more on figuring out ways to show them what you're actually doing. Mm-hmm. And that will be a very, I think, it'll be very clear whether you're delivering on your brand promise or not. And so if you're not, if there's not much to amplify, that'll be a clue that maybe, maybe some things need to change. Yeah. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to do at Rise is certainly not spend so much time talking and spend more time just sort of opening the cape a little bit and saying, look, here's what we're doing, and let people go, oh, you know what? That's actually really cool. I really like that.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, hey, let me tell you about why you should like this.
Yeah.
And I think for what I call intrapreneurs, people who are kind of trapped inside these organizations, it's like ask the question, like, what are we doing that supports this idea? And let's just show it to the world. And if that list isn't very long, then there's a gap, right? And I get it because we have this problem at Rise too, where sometimes our brand is what I would describe as aspirational. Right. And that's a common situation for most brands out there, is you kind of want to push a little bit from where you are. But the problem is if the gap's too big, then your membership, your staff, or they can start to become a little bit like disappointed, where you're like, oh, really? We didn't. Oh, you kind of said we like, and then you get into like, you know, maybe we don't believe the hype, and then that starts to become, you know, that's where you lose your group. So it's like a little bit aspirational, but not so much that you feel like you're kind of inauthentic, right?
No, those are two great pieces of advice. Really great. And the first piece is much like the almost the recipe to Pecha Kucha, where, you know, it, so much of it was about show, not tell. Whereas I remember some people would, you know, a slide would come up and they wouldn't actually say anything. The slide would say enough for itself. Mm. And then I remember analyzing afterwards, you go for drinks after the night, you know, those nights you facilitated, you know, on Canby Street there with, you know, during that one season, and then Granville Street for the second. And you talk about the recipe that made that one talk so good, or what was the talk you remembered, or what was the talk that like left an impression. And it was so much about showing with a little bit of telling, because it was so mm-hmm. much of it was slide based. On that, the messaging, the shift of mentality from, you know, renters being kind of second class or third class citizens or lesser than, what are your plans? What are you going to do? How are you going to shift that in this next year with kind of messaging and marketing and, you know, promotions?
I think it's just framing everything from a place of positivity, you know. So it's rather than the sort of, I don't want to say the negative, but rather than worrying about things like, you know, whether my tap's going to work or not, maybe we could talk about, you know, other things. And so I think it's just being, you know, open to the idea that people want to talk about bigger issues in life. You know, they want to talk about loneliness, or they want to talk about, you know, design, or, you know, they want to talk about technology, or, you know, there's all sorts of things. And there's no reason why, just because you're in rental, you can't talk about that stuff, because, you know, you're seeing it. You know, we're working on a custom app, right? So that all our people can talk to each other, right? Okay. Like that, like just things that shouldn't be that hard, right? It's like, it's like, oh, well, you know, do you want to opt into the community, you know, song list, or do you want to, you know, do you want to maybe get together and, you know, order food together, or maybe there's a, you know, dog walking service that we might all be able to be a part of, or, you know, who knows, or, you know, but I think the more that you can create infrastructure for people to participate in, then it's great. And so certainly I've talked to others about, you know, I talk about an idea about kind of cultural curation. So again, going back to my kind of roots as somebody who is like a, you know, sometimes we saw ourselves as sort of like dinner hosts, but for like the city. Right. So it's like, okay, so now I want to be like dinner hosts for a community. So how do we do that? You know, so maybe we, you know, we bring in, you know, we know we're going to get this like killer restaurant downstairs. And so why don't we also then do cooking classes in that restaurant for people in the building? So instead of like, one step would just be like, hey, you get 5% discount when you eat at so-and-so. And it's like, but that's not interesting. What about, you know, cooking classes? Or what about, you know, the garden on the roof grows, you know, whatever, and that gets, you know. So again, not, these are not revolutionary ideas, but they're hard. Like the simplest little idea is really hard. And so you got to pick, you know, 20 of them, and you might get like half of one.
or you always hear about the complications with like the you know, landlord that disappears, or the landlord that never replies, or he comes in and he's the crotchety landlord. But if you've like Jarvis'd it up, right, and you made some sort of app where they could be like, hey, I just got a leasing faucet. And it much like SaaS products, was it, you get put into a queue and you say, all right, it's being looked after, and you kind of know that someone's got it.
It's we're now in the world where technology is just fundamental to these types of situations, right? You know, the idea of writing something on a piece of paper, or giving it to someone and them writing it on a piece of paper and putting it somewhere, like it's just insane. But again, you know, it's an industry that's been doing their thing for the same way forever, right? So there's still people who write rent checks you know, for the year and give them in an envelope to the landlord who puts, you know, like, so just trying to be aware of, you know, what kind of changes is not that hard to do and is super helpful. And then also being aware of, you know, fundamentally, sometimes people's lives can't react quickly. And you need to be flexible to allow that to happen.
Okay, so having gone from agency side to brand side, is there any parts of agency side that you miss?
Yeah, or I mean, I miss the pace of it. You know, like we would do, I don't know, probably 50 projects a year at Cause and Effect, and now you do 3 projects in 5 years. So what I've learned to do at now that I'm kind of where I am is that I've had to break up my stuff into like little tiny wins all along so that I feel like I'm actually achieving something.
Because
it's just a very different pace than when you're an agency and you're banging out work for others and it's quick and every day is a new day and there's a, you know, There's a real fun side to that. There's also a bit of a, you know, takes a toll, you know,
you're spinning the constant, plates, you're juggling
constant burn of chasing clients and feeding the monster and all that stuff. Yeah. Right. That does take a toll. And I have to say that I do appreciate the fact that I'm in this place and I do have the time. If I want to sit with an idea for a couple of weeks, I can actually do that and probably get a better outcome from that time.
Better digestion processing. Mm-hmm. You can actually like the cows that chew the curd, right? You're just chewing it, get the most flavor and nutrition out of that grass. So and you've got one boss versus 50 right now.
I would say that we have a very interesting structure at Rise where we have technically we have a boss who kind of acts more as a combination of like sensei slash advisor. And then there's quite a flat hierarchy after that. So really we're establishing an interesting model where we're you know, we owe each other a certain level of respect and a certain level of delivery. And so in a way I have a bunch of bosses. And that was new for me, you know, coming from a world where I was my own boss for 12 years, owing people things is a bit different. So that's been fun.
So Stephen, any kind of closing advice, words, kind of what you're excited about for this next year, things that we can expect down the pipe from Rise and brand to yet to be named, that we're yet to watch and discover the name of?
Well, you know what? So Rise is in what I would call, what are we doing? Growth phase. So big growth. We've upped our game substantially, refinement. So we have this term internally that we call, you know, like a well-oiled machine, like we're really working on our processes and then diversification. So, you know, traditionally a developer is like buy land, build a building, sell a building, and you're done. We're taking a bit of a new approach to that, where sometimes we see ourselves a bit more sort of startup-y. So we've got our rental platform that's coming out this spring. We've actually decided that our construction team that we've had for a decade is going to start building for others as well as ourselves. There's just too much opportunity out there for us. And so in doing that, we're going to actually sort of create a new brand for that business arm as well. So we have a new brand that's launching in the next couple of weeks for our construction team.
That's great.
So that because, you know, developers don't want another developer building for them, so the name change is also, there's some cultural differences there too, which is kind of interesting. So we've got that happening. And we still, you know, do commercial projects and condo stuff. And so we're just, I think, at a point where, you know, we got a lot of pans in the fire, and we're really excited about all of them. And it's taken us a little while to kind of get to this place. So now it's like, okay, let's go.
And, that's awesome.
And that's a fun place to be, you know, and Vancouver's a fun place to be. There's always tons of conflict in Vancouver, you know, and I'm, you know, hopefully we'll figure some of these things out as a city. It'd be great to, you know, find our way through all this, you know, divide, but hopefully Rise can be a part of that.
Well, Stephen, it's been an honor to have you on the show. I've been a fan for a while and was really impacted personally, even professionally, from the Petchikutanites over the years, and appreciate what you've done for our city. And even now, just getting, it's so fun getting to watch Rise and just the way you are differentiating yourself from all the other developers and the cool stuff that's coming out. It's good to know the why and the how behind the scenes. I'm always fascinated by that, because why did someone choose to do something so different? And it is a lot of work, it sounds like. It's not as easy as maybe just being more creative. Listeners, check out Rise's website. Subscribe to some of the stuff that they're doing. I'll put a link in the bio as well for you. But Stephen, a real honor to have you here.
I appreciate that. You know what? It's really great to connect over all the years, and I'm really impressed with what you've been able to do here. It's really exciting.
Awesome. Well, thanks everyone for joining us this week, Marketing News Canada, and we'll see you next time on the show.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.